How did you develop your relationship with Ipay? Tell us quickly about that, how that all evolved. And now it has to be you answering, and he can interpret your answer.
ここはもうビジネスの関係なので、もう友達ではないですけど、割り切って付き合ってます。
Yeah, we're not friends or anything, we're just business partners.
What's up, baseball fans? Welcome to another episode of Put Me in Coach, a podcast about baseball here at the very beginning of the 2024 season. My name is Matt Coggins.
And my name is Carl Mizell, and I am fucking pumped.
Fuck yeah. And another one in for good measure. How you been, bud? How's your week been?
Oh, it's been great. We had a great weekend with the kids in my in-laws. One of my children is with my in-laws because it's spring break. So my child in school is just hanging out with his grandparents for a couple of days. So we're down to just one child in the house. So it's a lot quieter because my son's almost six. So he's in that phase where he's like, hey, dad, look at this. Watch me do this. Come look at this. Watch me do this. And I love him to death, but I need a break. So
yeah.
So I'm doing.
I grew out of that around my 20s, probably. I don't know.
I don't know. You were kind of like that when I met you, but
yeah, like I said, my 20s.
in a very endearing way. How are you? You had a long weekend.
I had my fantasy draft. I think it went okay. I grabbed Trey Turner as my first overall pick. My report card, according to CBS Fantasy, I am a solid C. I think a majority of why I got knocked down is because I grabbed Jack Flaherty, Reese Olson, and Casey Mize of the Tigers. So if the Tigers are bad this year, so will I. I'm going down with the ship. But I felt like it went okay for a first-time fantasy drafter.
Good. And you, like I said, you had a long weekend. You went to a concert. And you told me
that's this weekend.
Oh, that's this weekend. Okay, I thought that was last weekend. Okay, so this weekend you're going to a concert. Oh, yeah, because you're going to a ball game, right?
That's right. Tigers Mets.
Oh, that's right. Because season opens this week. Well, technically it opened last week, but
yeah, I guess it's weird because the Dodgers and Padres are both back to playing spring training games. So I'm like, I saw a Dodgers clip, and I'm like, now why would they play a real game that counts in the standings and then just go back to spring training? That's gotta feel bizarre, right?
It definitely does. And I don't know if you've seen some of the scuttlebutt. I think The Athletic had a piece on it. But there is sort of a rising groundswell of spring training's too long.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine having already been through like 4.5-5 weeks of spring training, flying 12 hours to South Korea, and then having to come back and then go back to the spring training routine. That has to freaking suck. Ugh.
Well, folks, this is our big season preview episode. It's actually going to be a two-part saga that we're recording all at once here right before the season starts. So this week, we'll be doing a deep dive into the players, who's projected to accomplish what, and who we predict will win some of those coveted performance awards like MVP, Cy Young. And then next week, we'll be covering the league as a whole. The new rules that we'll be seeing in play, how the race to the postseason is projected to shake out, and what the baseball writers and Vegas odds makers and sports statisticians are saying will happen this year. Even though I guarantee right now, before we've even gotten into it, we'll be very wrong by the end of the season, but we're going to get into it anyway.
Oh, absolutely. But luckily, we can just focus on the predictions. There's nothing else of note going on in baseball right now. It's been very quiet the last week.
Oh, but wait. There's breaking news. Yes, if you're a baseball fan, I'm sure you know by now that Shohei Ohtani, the star player in Major League Baseball, is embroiled into some sort of big-ass gambling scandal courtesy of his translator. Last week, news broke that Shohei Ohtani's longtime translator, Ipe Mizuhara, Mizuhara, all right, is being accused of stealing money from Ohtani in order to pay off a chunk of his gambling debts, which total over $4.5 million. MLB announced Friday evening that they would be investigating Ohtani and Mizuhara, and the IRS is also investigating. That is the official story as of right now. When this news first broke back in the beginning of last week, while the Dodgers were in Korea, the story was, according to Mizuhara, that Ohtani had consensually provided these funds to pay the gambling debts as a good buddy, just a good old friend.
I mean, I've given you what, $6-7 million? You've given me like $8-9. I mean,
a few million between friends
all the time.
These were transferred to a crooked bookie named Matthew Boyer, who himself is the center of a federal investigation, because sports betting is not legal in California. So all of these were done through nefarious means. Now, if that story were true, Shohei Ohtani denies that that's true. He said today in his press conference that this was a total lie from Ipe, but if it were true, if that's the actual story, it's against not only MLB's rules, but possibly criminally actionable, a form of tax evasion, essentially. Reporters began to circle around that scoop. The narrative changed. Shohei's lawyers essentially accused Mizuhara of stealing the funds from Ohtani. Most sources claim the bets were not placed on baseball. Shohei also says that the bets weren't on baseball. He says he doesn't gamble on any sports. That leads more questions. Why does Ipe have access to his funds? Why did no one notice $4.5 million leaving his account? Like, I know the guy's loaded and will be for the rest of his life with that big old Dodger contract, but $4.5 million is no small chunk of change, especially when it's leaving in, $500,000 chunks out of his account or something like that?
Yeah, I believe that was the going number, or the chunks, as it were. I was barely paying attention during the press conference. I was outside playing with my kid, but I did check up a little bit on it. At this point, there's nothing that can be said that hasn't already been said about it. So I'm not going to belabor the point, other than to say that I do not think this is going to be the last time we're going to have a situation like this. Now that you have legal betting, you've got teams that are trying, professional sports teams trying to be in Vegas. I feel like this is just the very small tip of a very large iceberg. Whether or not Ohtani was involved or not, whether or not he bet on baseball or not, any of that, that'll all come out in the wash. But this is, I think we're about due for like a betting scandal a year in various sports.
Yeah. I mean, NFL kind of had one to begin this last season. One of the Lions players was found guilty of it. And he wasn't even betting on the NFL or while he was on the clock. And that was still just across the line.
Yep, the NHL had one last year. I cannot remember off the top of my head who was involved, but there was I believe it was an Ottawa Senator. But there was a gambling issue in the NHL as well. So it's just, this is the new normal. Until gambling goes away, which it's not going to, this is the new normal.
Now, the central question is Ipe a fall guy for Ohtani doing his own gambling, or is Ipe the biggest con man that has ever lived? Because he's worked with Shohei for the better part of a decade now, and he's been with Shohei since he worked in Japan. He came from the Japanese league all the way to the Angels and now to the Dodgers. He was with him during the WBC, all that. You might ask, okay, if he's a fucking con man, you'd have to have some sort of suspicions. And more stories came out about him over the course of the week, where some people have been placing some scrutiny on his background, and they find that, he claims that he went to UC Riverside. Didn't go there. School's got no record of him. He says he worked with the Yankees and the Red Sox as a translator for Hideki Okijima. Nope, no record of him ever working with that player or either of those teams. And it's just, you know, you start to believe this idea that, yeah, maybe Shohei just had a friend, a guy he considered a friend, a coworker, who really took advantage of him, who managed a lot more of his life than we as fans were led to believe, and that guy took advantage of it. I can kind of see that, you know? I certainly believe Shohei's side of the story a lot more today than I did earlier in the week.
Absolutely. And I mean, he's never given us any reason to not believe him. So until he does, I'm going to go ahead and believe him. I was literally like, I was just thinking about this. I don't know if you remember the famous singer Selena, who mm-hmm. was right. She was murdered by somebody very close to her who was in her inner circle. I mean, it's not, and I'm not trying to conflate murder with theft, but what I'm saying is it's not unusual or unheard of for people in the inner circle of people like this
right.
to turn on them in one way or another. And given what we know about Shohei Ohtani and his just laser focus on his career and his preparation, maybe for him, $4.5 million just disappearing from his bank accounts wasn't that big of a concern. Because
money doesn't seem to be a big concern for him in general, given the way he structured his Dodgers contract. So I don't know, man. It did kind of. I kind of believe it.
Yeah. So we'll find out one day or won't. I don't know. I don't care. I want baseball.
Yeah. There was, you know, I don't want to get into the conspiracy theories. I wrote these down. Just people have conspiracies. They've been kind of finding like, oh, you know, here was a suspicious time where the odds were in favor of the Angels, but Shohei underperformed, and well, somebody could have put a bet on that. Whatever. People have been comparing him to Pete Rose. It's nothing anywhere remotely close to Pete Rose.
No.
I guess the biggest thing I've learned from all this is the commissioner that kicked Pete Rose out of the league was celebrated character actor Paul Giamatti's father.
Yeah.
and I went and bought a couple of his books, so I look forward to reading those. He's considered the philosopher king of baseball.
Yeah, his tenure was an extremely unusual time. I know we briefly talked about this in the Discord, and I mentioned to you that I would love to do an episode about the history of the role of commissioner in baseball, so keep your ears peeled for that. But yeah, he oversaw one of the biggest scandals in definitely in the past like half century of the sport.
Yeah. And Pete Rose is out there. He had a shitty little comment today where he was like, all I'm saying is if I would have had a translator back then, I would have gotten off scot-free. And it's like, no, idiot.
Yeah, shut up.
You rigged the games.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Not even the same.
Fuck Pete Rose.
Yeah.
So, moving on to a different story, there is an ugly power struggle that has embroiled the MLB Players Association as a group of player representatives are attempting to oust Deputy Director Bruce Meyer and replace him with former MLBPA lawyer Harry Marino. The heart of the conflict seems to stem from the rough free agency this offseason, Scott Boras's influence on union executives, Scott Boras in particular, and the disparity between high-end talents, free agency hauls like Shohei Ohtani, and those for middle-class players. Marino was instrumental in the MLBPA bringing minor leaguers into the union and reaching a collective bargaining agreement. Was it last year?
Yes.
As it stands, Marino has distanced himself from this whole coup that's been happening. despite last week, he actually had a sort of outline for if I were to be in a leadership position, here's what I would do. He's also 33 years old or something like that. Like,
yes.
Very young guy. Obviously had a big outline for how he was, I think, going to bring a little more parity and equality across the league. But otherwise, Director Tony Clark has claimed that some players have been pressuring others to take part in this whole coup. Players themselves, there's some players in this executive committee. Jack Flaherty went on the record in the article I read in The Athletic. He says, you know, Marino's not really part of this anymore. But as players, we're also not really happy with where things are. And we are looking to find common ground in this situation.
Yeah. And if you haven't read it and if you have access to The Athletic, and I know we talk about The Athletic a lot and they're owned by The New York Times and that's kind of gross or whatever, but they do some really great work. And the interview they had with Jack Flaherty, he was very well spoken and very contrite. He actually expressed remorse for ever like sort of like bringing Marino into the fold. But to your point, he is young. He was a former minor league ball player, so he really understands, you know, the ins and outs of that. And he's part of the mechanism that brought minor league players into the fold, so that now there are 38, there are 72 votes or 72 voters in the block, and now it's 38 major leaguers and 34 minor leaguers. So they don't quite have the same power as the voting block of the major leaguers. But I definitely, you're going to see some real interesting stuff coming out over the next couple of years in advance of the next CBA, because even within the union, there is a lot of haves and have-nots. There's mm-hmm. the people at the very top whose priorities are very different from the vast majority of the people who are in the middle and the bottom.
You even got to think about the chief player representative is Max Scherzer, who yep. is one of the best paid players in the whole league right now.
Yeah, yeah. And you've got Lucas Giolito, who's on the 8-player subcommittee. You got Jack Flaherty, who's on that committee. Both of those guys have gotten a bit of a bag at some mm-hmm. point. So they're inching in. They're still not making that Scherzer money. But they were most recently in that lower tier, not too long ago, making the league minimum, which again is $740,000, which is nothing to sneeze at. But when you
but
factor,
again, as I always say, you that's got to last you the rest of your life. So
exactly, it's got to last you the rest of your life. B, you've got agents to pay, you've got extra taxes to pay, the jock tax that they have to pay in every mm-hmm. city they play in, yada yada yada. So it's easy to look at it and just go $740,000. Oh, it must be rough. Always side with labor is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Always side with labor.
We got two other stories, but I think we should save them for next week and dig into the meat of this episode.
Absolutely.
So let's start it up. Let's go. Let's baseball. 2024. So as an inverse from last year, we're going to start with players. We're going to then go into our projections for how the league will shape in standings, in records, blah, blah, blah. And then to finish off, we're going to talk about the new rules that the league is bringing out this year. Not as drastic as last year, but still some new ones that have already kind of bit some teams in the ass during spring training. So, to start off, we're going to talk about players. And as far as players go, we're going to start with pitchers. So Carl, I provided us the FanGraphs statistical leaders leaderboard for their projections. Who FanGraphs thinks is going to lead the league by WAR? And it's also got, you know, their innings pitched, their strikeout rate, all this stuff. So let's go through some of these top pitchers that we're looking at here. Spencer Strider is considered, I guess, to be the top pitcher in the league. He's projected to lead the league in strikeouts with 258. His strikeout rate is supposed to be 12.5 per nine, with a walk rate of 3 per 9. He'll play in 31 games, 184 innings pitched, and a 3.18 ERA, a WAR of 4.9. Is Spencer Strider that good?
I mean, he's been pretty damn good so far. I don't see any reason why he won't continue to do that. I think the NL East is going to be real interesting. I mean, right off the bat, you're going to have, I believe, an opening day matchup with Philly and Atlanta, and it's going to be Wheeler v. Strider.
Yeah, so that's two, a big one.
You know, two preseason or NL Cy Young likely NL Cy Young candidates. Right off the bat, Wheeler just signed the best extension for a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember how it shook out that it was like that, but Wheeler's going to come up on my list a little bit later. But I think Spencer Strider's legit. I think he's legit. I think he's a heady guy. He's a cerebral guy. He doesn't just pitch with his body. He pitches with his brain. He's got that excellent fastball that just stays right at the top of the zone. Until somebody else comes along in the NL, I think he's got to be considered one of the at least top three pitchers in the NL at this point.
Yeah. As always, I think pitchers in Strider's position lean a lot on their team. I mean, they're projecting him to win 15, lose 7. That's fucking wild. Like, no one else even comes close to that kind of record as far as projections. These are all projections we're talking about, of course. And I think that in part has to do with the Braves are projected to win something close to 100 games. And I mean, my allegations of them notwithstanding, he is bolstered by that fact if he's got run support no matter what. Yep. Have the Braves ever been shut out last season? I doubt it. I'm not going to look it up, but I imagine that no matter what, if you're the ace of the Braves, you get out there knowing that you've got run support. He's got strikeout stuff. He's, I mean, it's a low ground ball rate. It's a pretty, like I said, a pretty solid strikeout rate. He's the king. I mean, I think unless something goes horribly wrong, probably the NL Cy Young, like you said.
Yeah. He's not my pick. He's not the person I'm putting my money on. But if he won it, I wouldn't be surprised.
The top 10 we're looking at this year across the whole league: Spencer Strider, Zach Wheeler, Kevin Gausman, Aaron Nola, Logan Webb, Pablo Lopez, Framber Valdez, Tarek Skubal, Tyler Glasnow, and Zach Gallen. Any names surprise you there?
Skubal. Quite. I mean, it's a surprise. It's not a surprise to you and me being Tigers fans. But I have really relished a lot, seen a lot of people, you know, from Pitching Ninja and so on and so forth, going, don't sleep on the Tigers, but especially don't sleep on Skubal. And if you go back and look at his his second half last year, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really exciting to see if he continues that. So it's surprising that he's getting national attention, but it's not surprising to me that he's on the list, if that makes sense.
Yeah, most people have still been very discounting towards the Tigers, and it's definitely something we're used to and kind of deserved because of how terrible they've been for the last decade or so. But like you said, it's really refreshing to see a Tiger on that list. I honestly, personally, think more should be up there, especially when it comes to, you know, strikeout projections. Like, Skubal's projected for 171. That wouldn't put him in the top 10, but that's still nothing to sneeze at.
No.
And he's also projected to have a 10 strikeout per 9-inning rate. That's huge. That puts him up there with Strider, Gausman, and Glasnow as the only people in the top 10 above 10. So, and he's the ace, which is crazy. He's young as hell, and he's considered now the ace of the Tigers' rotation, which I think is probably one of the strongest in the league.
Yeah, and if you take a look at the projections, do you see anything interesting about the innings pitch projections for the top 10? Only one pitcher, number 5, Logan Webb, is the only one they're predicting is going to eclipse the 200 innings pitched mark this year.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's just
a couple guys come close, but I guess nobody really does that anymore, huh?
Yeah. Last year it was only 5.
Wow, and that used to be the norm. That's wild.
Yeah, when I did the Willie Hernandez episode, last year there were 5. In the year that Willie Hernandez, in 1984, there were, I think, 56 or 57 that went over that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your projected strikeout leaders, the top 10 will be Spencer Strider, Kevin Gausman, Pablo Lopez, Blake Snell. He kind of snuck in there. He wasn't in the top 10 for WAR, but he's striking out a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Corbin Burnes, Jesus Luzardo, Luis Castillo, Dylan Cease, Zach Gallen, and Aaron Nola. I think those were sourced from a different site, right? Are those the same numbers? Those are the same numbers. I don't know. That's weird.
Ah, who knows?
So you can be a great pitcher. You can be the most valuable pitcher, but you'll still strike out 50 to 100 less than Dylan Cease or Blake Snell. you know, any more thoughts on our top pitchers? Who's really standing out to you other than Tarek Skubal, of course?
Of course. I need to go back up there for a second. Let's see here. There's a name that I really like that I think deserves more attention than he gets, and that's at number 11, George Kirby out of Seattle.
Yeah.
I don't think he gets the attention nationally that he probably deserves, and I think that's going to change this year. I don't think that Seattle's going to be good enough that they're going to get enough attention that some of that will rub off on him, and I think that he'll start to get the shine that Spencer Strider is getting in Atlanta.
Yeah. I find this interesting. Nobody in the top 20 has an ERA below 3, and only a handful are below 3.5, which I think is crazy because you usually see, you know, Cy Young winners kind of float around 2.5 or at least like below 3. So I find that interesting. The league predicts a little more offense this year than previously.
Yeah. I'm all for it.
Yeah. Let's hit some home runs, baby.
Hell yeah.
Of course, we're talking pitchers. We got to talk about our save leaders. Camilo Doval is projected to lead the league in saves at 36 with an ERA of 3.29. Who is that?
Oh, he's a if you don't play MLB The Show, you might not know who he is, because he's a nightmare in The Show, because he's got a 100 mile an hour cutter, like a 96 mile an hour sinker.
What? Oh my god.
Yeah, it's gnarly. And he's got a pretty unusual arm slot, so he could be a bit of a nightmare. But he is a pretty damn fine pitcher for the San Francisco Giants.
Also still have the Twins, right? The Rogers Twins?
What? Wait, no. I think they definitely still have Tyler. I don't know if they have the other one, but they have the side armor with the loopy slider, but I think the other brother ended up in Minnesota, or did he come from Minnesota
really?
To San Francisco? I can't remember.
Okay.
But they definitely have one of them. They have the weird one.
Yeah. The weird one. The harder one to play against. Yeah.
Yeah.
So wild that there could be twins. One's a righty that pitches in a normal arm slot. The other's a lefty submariner. Or did I get that backwards?
You got that backwards.
I don't know.
Righty submariner.
Okay.
Yep.
Righty's a submariner. The lefty pitches normal. Anyway, Edwin Diaz will be right behind him. If this is true, Edwin Diaz coming off a year-long injury to come back and come close to leading the league in saves with a 2.78 ERA would be astounding. I think people forget that he was terrible when he first came to the Mets, and then figured it out in 2022 and had that great season then. If that's true, if that's the case, hell yeah, Edwin Diaz. Rest of the list includes Emmanuel Clase, Kenley Jansen, David Bednar, Rossiel Iglesias, Josh Hader, Alexis Diaz, Clay Holmes, and Evan Phillips. I think this is a great list. This list makes a lot of sense to me. Some names I wasn't super familiar with. Alexis Diaz, I feel like, is sort of a rising star in the late innings game. They're projecting him to have a 4.32 ERA, which generally isn't great for a closer, but...
Well, Alexis Diaz comes by it honest. He is the brother of Edwin.
Let's talk about a couple breakout sensations, some rookies that are going to make names for themselves in the pitching game this year. Of course, we got to talk about Yoshinobu Yamamoto, starting pitcher for the Dodgers. Japanese phenomenon. He's 25 years old, just signed an enormous contract for the Dodgers. We actually got to see a little in-game action from him. We talked a little bit about how he was kind of shaky in spring training, and I said, what does it mean for the Dodgers season? What does it mean for him? And then we got to see him in action, pitching against the Padres in Korea, and he got shellacked, and it had nothing to do with the infield defense. He just looked very hittable. A lot of people are still projecting him to be among the better pitchers in the league. Of course, in Japan, he won 3 MVPs and Triple Crowns consecutively. I don't know. I wanted him in fantasy because I was like, well, maybe nobody wants him and I'll take him. But I wasn't so lucky. In real life, I don't know. I feel there's a lot of unknowns about him. Same with Kodai Senga last year, where you had to ask, how easy is it going to be to transition from Japanese baseball, where the ball is a little smaller, it's tackier, the stadiums are built a little differently, to out here, where it's just a different ball in general and a little bit of a different game.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's too early to tell. I'm not going to put too much stock into it yet. There was a conversation yesterday in the Tiger subreddit about like how much stock should I put in what I see in spring training? And it reminded me of something. If you watch the Tigers Blue Jays game over the weekend, the Toronto broadcast was talking about Yusei Kikuchi throwing his changeup more, and they were less concerned about the results and more about the performance. So they want him to throw his changeup more so he can get more comfortable with it. That's what you do in spring training. So sometimes you see pitchers with inflated statistics because they're not worried about trying to like get guys out. They're just working on maybe one pitch or that sort of thing. I think that's what he was. I think they were still treating those games in Korea like spring training.
I could see that.
Just keep doing what you're doing. Both teams are like, look, it's only 2 games. We're jet lagged as shit. Let's just, yeah. Every game counts. Yeah, every game counts. I get it. But keep doing what you're doing and just keep working on it. So if it's April, end of April, and he's still getting shellacked, then I would worry. But until then, I there's too much pedigree there to, and the leagues are not that far apart. I know some people like to think that the Japanese professional leagues are like 4A baseball.
I don't really believe that.
Yeah, no, not you, but you know, some some people like to shit on it and think that it's somehow inferior, despite the fact that one of the greatest baseball players of all time came from there.
Who?
Ichiro, of course. Who else would I be talking about?
Next up, we've got Shota Imanaga. He's another starting pitcher for the Cubs. Another big Japanese free agent get. The Cubs were kind of a surprise landing spot for him. But he was wowing in the WBC last year. He was sort of the ace of their rotation, if I recall, because Shohei wasn't doing as much pitching in the WBC. I know that was only a year ago.
He was closing. Him and Roki Sasaki were...
That's right.
Two of their big pitchers.
He had a great year last year. He led the NPB with 174 strikeouts. He has a wicked splitter. Cubs are contending, or at least they want to. They didn't make a lot of big gets this offseason except for Craig Counsell and Imanaga, but I don't know. What do you think? What do you think? It's the year of the new Japanese pitchers kind of making their spot in the league.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people underestimate the transition from the Japanese game to the American Major League game. I think he'll struggle, but I do think that he's going to benefit from being in what I think is a down year for the NL Central. I don't think that the NL Central is going to be particularly strong. I don't think it's going to be AL Central bad. And this is speaking as somebody who worships the ground that the Tigers walk on, more or less as a fan. So I get it. But I think when he's in the division, I think he's going to do a little bit better. I think that it's a down division. Yeah. So I think he's going to benefit from that. He might be worse off because of the balanced schedule and not seeing as many central division teams as many times.
We've also got a couple homegrown rookies. We've got Kyle Harrison, who's starting for the Giants. He dipped his toes into the majors last year, now looks to anchor a stellar rotation, and they really do have a really good rotation over there, especially with Blake Snell. I guess, you know, you sign a Cy Young, a reigning Cy Young winner, and he's supposed to be your number two? Like, that's wild. Kyle Harrison, I guess, is going to be sort of the 4-5 guy. He's got tremendous control, relies primarily on a lower speed fastball, and had a 37% K rate in the minors,
which is really good,
even for the minors. And I think the Giants also are looking to contend this year. I think pitching is going to be one of their strengths, and that's a good pitcher's park to work in. Our last little rookie to look forward to in this category is Paul Skeens, who's working for Pittsburgh these days, starting pitcher. Now, everybody remembers him from the college baseball world last year. He's not going to start this season in the majors, but a lot of people are predicting that he'll be up. He's an older, recent graduate of college, but he was a phenomenal player at LSU. Got an insane fastball that averages at 98 miles an hour. Topped out at 103 while he was at LSU. I can only imagine if you're working with a pitching lab. Granted, you know, Pittsburgh's probably not the greatest place developing pitchers, but a major league pitching lab nonetheless is probably going to help him dial up that velocity. And he is dating Livy Dunn, the gymnast and star of the weird Baby Gronk memes that went around last summer.
Oh, God. Is he?
Yeah.
Wow. You know, nothing surprises me much, or very few things surprise me, but how out of touch and old I felt trying to understand that. I was just fucking lost. I was lost. Yeah.
So Paul Skeens, the new Riz King, I guess. So our top Cy Young candidates of this year. This is according to MLB beat writers. MLB has a big list. Their own beat writers gave in their predictions and they justified them. You can read the article. It's linked in our show notes. For the AL, top contender, Pablo Lopez of Minnesota, followed by Gerrit Cole of the Yankees. I wonder if they wrote this before the injury. Yeah. He's still contending, I think. Tarek Skubal of Detroit, Corbin Burns of the Orioles, and George Kirby of Seattle. And in the NL, Spencer Strider of Atlanta, Logan Webb of the Giants, Zach Wheeler of the Phillies, Kodai Senga of the Mets, and Yamamoto from the Dodgers. They also had some dark horses like Bobby Miller and Tyler Glasnow of the Dodgers, Michael King of the Padres, Cole Reagans of the Royals, and Jesus Luzardo of Miami. Good list.
Yeah. I really like the Michael King dark horse pick. Former Yankees bullpen arm, went over in the Soto trade, and I think that the Giants and the Padres pitching staffs are going to make LA's coronation a bit more difficult.
I agree. I think we're going to explore that a little bit later in the show, but yeah. I agree. Now, Michael King was a bullpen guy, but he's now a starter for the Padres. Interesting. Yeah. I like that a lot of those West Coast teams, because the Padres did that with
Seth Lugo.
Seth Lugo last year, who was a bullpen guy for the Mets, and then he said, I want to start. They said no. Maybe they should have let him. So I kind of like that, like giving guys a chance to kind of prove themselves in a longer innings leash. Otherwise, I mean, Kodai Senga I find to be kind of a surprising name, not because of his talent, just because of where the Mets are. I feel like a lot of these have more to do with how these teams perform sometimes than how they perform. Although, again, last year, Gerrit Cole and Blake Snell, their teams were not good, and they were good. So I guess it's really anybody's game.
Yeah. Speaking of West Coast and doing that, former St. Louis Cardinals fireballer Jordan Hicks, who's now with the Giants, he's being sort of lengthened to start games as well.
Wow. That's wild. Good for them. That's all I said. I like anytime a guy can get out there and prove himself. I also saw a former Tiger bullpen guy, Tyler Alexander, is maybe getting the fifth rotation spot for the Rays.
Oh, good for him. He was such a key cog in the Tigers bullpen. The surprisingly good Tigers bullpen last year.
Yeah, I agree. I miss him. Oh well. Let's talk about hitters. And is it anybody's surprise that the leader, projected leader by WAR, by home runs, by average, by on-base percentage, by slugging percentage, by damn near everything, Ronald Acuña Jr.? Yeah.
I need everybody to know that Matt controls the sound effects. I feel like it's always necessary that everybody knows that this is not me.
What?
So if your ears or if your ears are bleeding, I'm
is
kidding.
Going
they're not there.
Overboard?
No. No.
Okay. What can you say about Ronald Acuña Jr.? He is a fantasy player's wet dream. He's projected to have a batting average of .318. And why do they never add OPS together on FanGraphs? Come on, guys. So I got to do the math here.
Make me do all the goddamn math.
9, 10, hold on. I can do this, Carl. Okay. Over 1. It'll be an OPS of over 1. I can tell you that, which is big.
pretty
1 dot something. apparently he's not going to walk a lot. That's interesting. 11%, a little low compared to most of the guys on the leaderboard. Strikeout rate's low though. 100 RBIs, 56 stolen bases, probably going to lead the league in stolen bases this year again. I mean, this is, again, a massive if he's healthy thing, but Ronald Acuña has proven that when he is healthy, he cannot be stopped. Whether or not he's on steroids, that is out of the question at this point because, like, you know, fuck. Fuck.
It was impressive. You have... Whatever he is or isn't doing aside, you still have to perform and you still have to play the game. That's why I don't care as much about the whole Houston Astros cheating thing because you still have to, even if you know a slider's coming, you still have to try and hit a slider. If you know a fastball, or if off-speed's coming, you still have to do it. It's one thing to know it. It's another thing to do it. And yes, knowing what's coming does make it easier. I'm sure if it had been my team that was losing to them in those games, I would probably feel differently.
Luckily, the Tigers only play him 3 times a year. So.
Yeah, exactly. But to that point, irrespective of all that, he is still playing the game at an extremely high level, and I do find myself watching a lot of Braves games on mute.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to hear the fucking tomahawk chop.
Smoltz.
I don't want
to. Oh, I thought you'd say Smoltz. You don't hear the chop either.
I don't want
to
hear Smoltz.
There's a lot to not like about the Braves.
Yeah, I don't want to hear Smoltz. I don't want to hear the fucking chop. I don't want to hear a bunch of white suburbanites. You know, I don't.
Yeah.
Shut up. Anyway.
So fuck the Braves, but also you gotta give it to them.
Yeah.
Cause fuck the Yankees as well, and they got Juan Soto, supposed to be the number two guy in the league, and not behind by that much, to be honest. He's projected to also have 38 home runs, over 100 RBIs, striking out a little more. That's kind of his deal, and not stealing as many bases, but you know. OPS somewhere in the upper nines, doing that math there.
Here, let me take this one. That would be 993.
Thank you.
Yep.
What do I always say, Carl? I'm not a math guy. So, right behind Soto is Mookie Betts, then Aaron Judge, Yordan Alvarez, Adley Rutschman, Julio Rodriguez, Fernando Tatis Jr., Jose Ramirez, Gunnar Henderson. Those are your leaders in WAR, all above 5.
Yeah.
Just offensively, Shohei Ohtani not on that list.
Yeah, nowhere. He's nowhere on this list, is he?
He's on the home runs list. He's projected to be number 5 in the league with 40 home runs, but as far as batting value goes, he is not in the top 20. Which I find very interesting.
You know, this is the second time I've noticed. So according to this list, Shohei Ohtani will not be, according to this list, in the top 20 in WAR at the end of the season. And every time I play a game of MLB The Show against the Dodgers, he is not the designated hitter. They never put him in. Is there something going on?
Does the algorithm know something we don't?
Al Gore in your rhythm?
This list isn't very surprising, though. I guess Gunnar Henderson's kind of a newer name to a list like this. You got Bobby Witt at 12. Everybody else, kind of names you're very familiar with. Yandy Diaz even bringing up the rear at 19. If you're a fantasy player, I know for a fact that you drafted one of these guys in the first or second round. And
oh, yeah.
That's the best players in the league right now, and it's not surprising.
Quick question about your fantasy league. Was it traditional draft or was it auction style?
I guess traditional. It was like everybody got a number. Like I was number 11, and then the second round was a snake style, so then I got the second pick in the second round.
Okay, yeah. So you just did draft pick. Because a lot of fantasy leagues will do, like, you'll get a budget, and you have to, and it's not a big, like, I think, like, the biggest high-end players are usually around, like, $30, maybe $40, right? But Corbin Carroll is a guy that I would overpay for to the point where everybody else in the league would mock me for it.
Yeah.
I am all in on Corbin Carroll. I think he's an absolute blast to watch play. He's the kind of player, and please don't misunderstand what I'm about to say, but he's the kind of player that when I played, I was speedier guy, you know, I didn't have... He has a surprising amount of pop. I did not. And he's undersized. I was very tall, but I was very lean, so I was a bit undersized as well. So I feel like this kinship. I'm not trying to say that I was like Corbin Carroll. So I just like his vibe.
Yeah, and this is his second full year in the league, and he's projected to be the 15th most valuable batter in the league. And I think that that's... awesome, especially on a team like Arizona that's, I think, a little undervalued despite going to the World Series last year.
Yeah.
Your home run leaders, Aaron Judge, projected to hit 46. So I guess he's not going to break his own record. Too bad. But that'd be awesome to see him pop 46 home runs after that horrific toe jam injury that he never really got fixed. Is that right?
Yeah, he ran into the wall, broke his toe. Like the gate went through, and he kind of.
I hope the Dodgers fixed that gate.
Yeah.
What the fuck was that?
Be a real shame if something were to happen to somebody else.
Yeah, like a certain outfielder named James Outman. I don't know. I was like, wait, what outfielder am I mad at with the Dodgers?
I don't know, but I just need you to know that I was ready to yes and my way through that with you.
Yeah. Pete Alonso coming up with number two at 42. That would be awesome for Pete. He had a really down year last year, and I'd love to see him pop some home runs. Kyle Schwarber, 42 home runs. I assume hitting somewhere around 210.
I think last year he was at 196, so 210 would be an improvement.
What position do they even play him in anymore? Because he can't play first. He can't play outfield.
Is he
just the DH?
He's the DH, although he does do some. He was doing time in left field, but now that Harper is the full-time first baseman now, he's their designated hitter.
Okay.
And I'm sure he's just like, thank God.
Yeah.
He still has a job. Every fly ball's an adventure when Kyle's in left field.
Matt Olson with 41, Shohei Ohtani with 40. Everybody in the top five hitting at least 40 home runs, according to this projection. Everybody in the top 10 hitting at least 30. Yordan Alvarez, Juan Soto, Ronald Acuna Jr., Fernando Tatis Jr., and Mike Trout projected at number 10 with 36. How do you feel about a Mike Trout comeback season?
I don't.
No.
I don't. I know we talked about this. We talked about making like one big prediction that doesn't have anything to do with like wins or losses or anything like that. And my prediction is that this is the year that we realize that Mike Trout's best years are behind us. I think from here, I think it's all downhill for Mike Trout. I think he's going to be lucky to play over 100 games this year. I think we're going to have to start grappling with that. So I think that this is a bit premature. But then again, you also need to remember that I'm the person last year who said that Juan Soto was overrated. So take that with a grain of salt.
You weren't super wrong last year. He wasn't amazing.
The point I wanted to make when I said that was that I don't think he's $500 million, you know,
yeah,
contract good.
He's going to get no matter what next year.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be number two behind Ohtani. I think he's going to fall somewhere between Judge and Ohtani.
Yeah. I don't know. I hope Mike Trout has a comeback. I'd love to see it from him, but he still plays for the Angels. He doesn't have Shohei Ohtani as his protection in the lineup anymore, all by himself. And is he? You think he's still fielding, or are they going to make him the DH now?
He'll still be out in center. At least for the start of the season. All you need to know about the Angels, I'm going to just continue to reference the show throughout the course of the year. But
please,
if you go to like the collection, like if you see all 40 cards available for the Angels, they're ranked from left to right and then down, like the highest rating and then down. Mike Trout's like a 91, 92, and I think the next it goes from like Mike Trout's diamond 91 or 92 to like a low silver, like 75. Like, it's not like the Dodgers where you go, you know, Ohtani, Kershaw, Freeman, Betts, you know, all these diamonds.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just this one guy and then a bunch of silvers and bronzes. And that's pretty much a good visual representation of what it's going to be like to watch the Angels this year.
Yeah. Well, Mike, we're pulling for you, but we're not.
I hope I'm wrong, because he's been a transcendent talent for his time, for his 12 years in the league, but I don't think I am.
Stolen base leaders, Ronald Acuna Jr., 56. Estuary Ruiz of the A's at 47. Bobby Witt, Corbin Carroll, CJ Abrams, they're pulling up there with about 30. So, I mean, like, not for nothing, Corbin Carroll's going to be in the 2020 club, according to this projection. Hey, I think so would Bobby Witt. That would be huge for the Royals.
Yeah, I think he might already be.
I think you're right. Witt's cool. I don't want to like him, but, eh.
Yeah, I'd like him more if he wasn't in our division.
Yeah. Some rookies we're looking forward to this year. Evan Carter, we've already seen him, but he's still technically a rookie because they called him up, the Rangers, they called him up right before the postseason last year, and he went on a fucking tear, being instrumental in their World Series win, ready for his first full season in the bigs, their everyday left fielder. Jackson Chirillo of Milwaukee is going to be making the start this year. He had a great minors career, first to ever go 2040. He just signed a largest contract extension ever for a player never to touch the majors. We're seeing a lot of those lately.
Mm-hmm.
Colt Keith of Detroit got one as well.
Yep. I was just going to say, we saw another similar contract in Colorado with Ezekiel Tovar signing an extension. He has played, obviously, but they bought out like 5 years of his, you know, six pre-free agency years.
Yeah. That's huge. Like guys like that who have barely made a mark on the league. Teams are investing in the future in a bigger way than they have ever. Colt Keith, he can run, he can hit, he can field, does a lot. He's projected, I think, among the top prospects to hit the league this year. Going to be huge because the Tigers have not had a lot of infield strength the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. His partner to the right of him will be one Javi Baez, so see how that goes.
Yeah, I hear you laughing, listener. Don't laugh at us. I wanted Marcus Semien. That was my pick.
Yeah. Well, it's not like he's been up to much.
What's he been doing? Yeah. Oh, fuck.
Now, Jackson Holliday is a rookie I hope to see this year. Number one prospect in baseball and the Orioles' umpteenth rookie with that honor. But he won't start in the majors. They're probably keeping him down until about May to make sure that they can control him for another year. That's called service time manipulation, kids. And it sucks. I hope he's in the league this year. He's a very talented guy. Looks very strange. But I don't know why I'm so bugged out by the way he looks, but he looks like a little alien man.
He looks, you know, the thing I thought was he kind of looked like if a caveman were also into surfing. Like he looks vaguely Cro-Magnon to me. And I don't normally like to like comment on people's looks or anything like that. I'm not trying to cast
unattractive.
No,
it's just very bizarre look.
Yeah, it's just a different look is all I'm saying.
Yeah, we got Wyatt Langford of Texas. Now this is a controversial thing because he is making the opening day roster, and he was a pick from last year. Many Tigers fans wanted this guy. Fourth overall pick in 2023. Yeah. Carl's one of them. Yeah. Tigers went with Max Clark instead, who is much younger than Wyatt Langford and nowhere near MLB ready. And here's Wyatt Langford, ready to go in the majors. He went nuts in the minors, 1.157 OPS. He will be starting in the outfield. Wyatt Langford joining Evan Carter and Adolis Garcia in that already stacked outfield.
Yeah.
Jung-Hoo Lee of the Giants, another outfielder, another huge offseason pickup for them. He's a Korean star coming off a down year. He had some injuries last year, but ready to make a statement. He's got a career 407 on base percentage over in Korea. So that's pretty big. Another big understated giant.
Yeah. And one who I think of all the foreign players who are making their debuts this year, I think he's going to be the one who struggles the most.
Ooh. Okay.
It's just my guess.
More than the pitchers
because I think it's harder to adjust. I think it's harder to adjust as a hitter to the pitching here than it would be as a pitcher to adjust to the hitting here, because pitchers still have the advantage no matter where they pitch.
I can see that. And Korea, their stadiums are a little smaller, right? Like they don't do as big a stadiums as Japan or America.
I believe that is correct, yes.
So that might have something to do with a struggle, too. You play in a, 20,000 seat stadium for most of your career, and then you make a debut in, like, I don't know, what's it called? Oracle Park?
Yep.
Where the Giants play? Mm-hmm. Huge. There's a bay behind it.
There's a bay in everything.
Yeah. MVP candidates, according to the MLB beat writers, Julio Rodriguez, Juan Soto, Corey Seager, Aaron Judge, and Adley Rutschman of the AL. Mookie Betts, Ronald Acuna, Shohei Ohtani, Fernando Tatis, Corbin Carroll of the NL. Now, two of those guys in that list were last year's MVPs in either league, so I found that kind of funny. Dark horses include Royce Lewis, Will Smith, Riley Green, Key Brian Hayes, and Odolis Garcia, who was the ALCS MVP.
Yeah, Royce Lewis, another, I like the inclusion. I think he's the darkest horse there. Maybe, well, that's tough. It's tough to say who's him.
He's among the most clutch players on the Twins, and the Twins are projected to be good.
Yeah.
So,
Again, another player I wish was not in our division. I'd like more if wasn't in our division.
If you put Riley Green on this list, who I think is a pretty dark horse, because that's assuming he plays 160 games.
if he gives us 135, I'll be happy.
Yeah. Oh, Riley, stay healthy, baby.
Yeah.
But I want that Riley Green MVP, Tarek Skubal, Cy Young, Tigers World Series win. Let's go!
Play it on the hop, Riley. Play it on the hop. You don't have to die for them all. Play it on the hop.
Well, he's going to be in the corner this year, so hopefully that helps. Rookie of the Year picks, almost unanimously, most people, players and beat writers, voted for preseason. They said Yoshi Yamamoto was most likely. 51% of them said Yamamoto was most likely to be the National League Rookie of the Year. Jackson Chirino, 17% of that same vote. Evan Carter got a share of those votes for the AL. Jackson Holliday got right behind him. So those are your Rookie of the Year projections. Not really set in stone. Yamamoto obviously has to be good. Yeah. But he gets the major advantage of being 25 and having a career before he comes to America. So
yeah. Still a rookie, though.
Still a rookie. I didn't want to like jet through that section, but we do want to talk about our projections for the league. So those are the players. Any closing thoughts on them? Who do you think might make a big comeback this year? Who might suck shit out of this whole list?
Well, I actually have, I have a classic notebook here with a couple of names on it. But out of that list, I see a couple. That's the wrong mouse. There's a name on this list that I thought was interesting and that I thought about going with as my pick for MVP in the American League. And that's Corey Seager. I think he's definitely going to be interesting to watch. As far as who's going to suck shit this year, I think it's going to be Tatis.
Interesting.
I think Tatis is going to be he's going to suck shit relative to what we know he's capable of, I think, but I think he's going to come back down to earth a little bit. I just don't have a good feeling about his play this year. But the good news is, even if I'm wrong, nobody gives a shit, and it just means that he has a good season, and I enjoy watching him play.
And we're all going to forget about it by All-Star break anyway.
Yeah.
I have a similar feeling about Juan Soto. I don't want to give the big take of he's overrated, like you said, because, again, I still think he's getting that contract. But I think he's going to underperform based on what people think he can bring to the Yankees.
Interesting, because he is my pick for the American League MVP this year.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. I went with the chalk, so to speak, on the MVP picks. I think that it's going to be Ohtani in the National League and Soto in the American League. I think Juan Soto is going to just feast on that 314. I think 314 down the right
teeny
field line.
Teeny tiny little stadium. It is a teeny tiny stadium.
I think he's going to feast, and then yeah. He's going to have a handful of games in Boston. You know, he's going to be able to tuck a few down around Pesky's pole, maybe.
Yeah.
Bounce him off.
He's
the
got Judge backing him up in the lineup.
Yeah, he's going to bounce a couple off the monster.
Right.
I don't think the Yankees are going to be good. Like, I think they'll get a wild card maybe, but I don't think they're going to. I think the Orioles are legit. The Yankees would be pretty good, but I think, once again, the pitching is going to be the Yankees' downfall.
Yeah, I agree. I'd love to see a Julio Rodriguez MVP. I think the guy deserves the hell out of it, but I think his team is going to be much worse this year, and that's a reflection then of how he'll perform.
Agreed. And he's such a fun player to watch, and he just really seems like he has a real affinity for the game and love for the game. Not that the other guys don't, but he just has that Ken Griffey Jr. vibe. You know, he's that that Griffey drip, as it were.
the Griffey Riz. He's the Riz King.
He's the
All right, no, that's Paul Skeens. We all know it.
God damn. Do you want to talk about, do you want to make picks for the awards? I wrote things down.
Okay. Yes, please.
Yeah. So this is what I did. For comebacks, if we're just going by comeback play of the year, I had to have a little bit of homerism. I'm going in the American League with Jack Flaherty.
Jack Flaherty.
In the National League, I like Rhys Hoskins. I think he's found himself in a really good position in Milwaukee. I think that injury that he had in spring training last year was a fluke, and he's going to bounce back in a big way. Rookie of the year, I think Evan Carter is going to pull a Randy Arozarena, where he debuts, has a killer playoffs, and then comes back and wins the Rookie of the Year, making people go, what the fuck? How's he a rookie? And then in the National League, I have an asterisk. I think Paul Skeens is going to be the Rookie of the Year if he gets the call up early enough.
Okay.
If he does. If he does not, I really like Michael Busch in Chicago. He came over in a trade from the Dodgers. He has been just sort of landlocked or log jammed in the Dodgers minor league system for a few years now, and I think he's poised for a big breakout. I think Corbin Burns gets the Cy Young in the American League. I think Zach Wheeler gets it in the National League. And then I think Soto and Ohtani are your MVP candidates. But if all this Ohtani stuff goes sideways and he ends up not playing because assuming that something is going on with Ohtani, my backup pick is Austin Riley of the Atlanta Braves.
Austin Riley, really? Okay.
I think he is an underappreciated, despite him being such an outstanding performer, even in that amazing roster, I think he's a little bit underappreciated, and I think he's poised to make some noise this year.
My heart, my gut tells me we might get a repeat in the National League. I think Ronald Acuna, if healthy, will repeat. I really can't tell you AL. Corey Seager feels like a favorite to me more than Judge or Soto.
Yeah. I can see that.
Rookie of the year, I feel like it's going to be, I don't want to say the lame pick, but I feel like the lame pick is Yamamoto. If he performs like people think he will.
Right.
Like he should. And Evan Carter. I love Evan Carter. I think that would be a tremendous pick for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. Although, I really wanted to pick Colt Keith. But
come on, Colt. Show the world.
Yeah. I'll pick Carter. And if I'm wrong, who cares? It's
Colt
sports.
Keith comes out the gate, rookie year, 40 home runs, 900 OPS, hits the triple crown. Tigers go to the World Series.
And that
we can dream, right?
That would make him your favorite player ever if he hit if he had a 400 OBP and a 500 slugging percentage. You go, that I can do.
I can math that. All right. I like the comeback players too. I didn't pick any of those.
That's fine.
Last year's guy had cancer. How do you beat that? Like, well, I was really shitty last year. No, I'm not. How did you get it? Oh, I had cancer and came back. Here I am.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever told this story on the show. I feel like I might have years and years ago. I was in line for the Top Thrill Dragster at Cedar Point. And I was in line behind these two dudes that were friends. And one of them was just a 6'6" beanpole. And the other guy was a rather large fellow. And the thin guy, we were just talking. And he goes, yeah, I used to look like my friend here. You know, I was built more like my friend. And I was like, oh, man, congratulations. How'd you do it? And he said, I had cancer. And I was like, fuck. And that's when I learned to never. I mean, this is year like 20 something years ago before I was more enlightened and learned not to comment on people's weight or appearances or congratulate them for, you know, body changes. So, yeah, that's kind of like that.
Yeah. Everybody's on Ozempic these days. Just do the old fashioned thing. Get cancer.
Exactly. Oh, I hope that's not the thing that makes us famous.
Well, Carl, the baseball season is upon us, my friend. Opening day is, as people are listening to the episode coming out on Wednesday, opening day is tomorrow. I will be parked on the couch watching the Mets at 1 and the Tigers at 4. And then I will be in Citi Field on Monday watching the Tigers and Mets together, as I've always dreamed.
Yeah. I'm so excited. This was the year I was going to take my son to his first opening day, but I have a workout, which Tigers opening day is April 4th, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a work obligation in fucking Ohio.
Damn it.
Of all places. Not only do I have to miss it, but I have to miss it in Ohio.
Damn it. And that is going to do it for the first installment of our 2024 season preview. Next week, we are going to take a stab at guessing how the league will shake out this year, who will win their division, make the playoffs, win the World Series, and of course, how wrong we are likely to be. We're also going to chat about some of the new rules the players have to deal with this year, and I'll pop in with a little recap of this first weekend of the season and all the other baseball news. Until then, enjoy yourself some baseball, and thank you for listening to Put Me In Coach. Put Me In Coach is an Arctic Sounds original podcast hosted by Matt Coggins and Carl Mizell. Theme music is by Quack Quack Seatback. Edited and produced by Matt Coggins. Check out the footnotes of this episode to see links to all the great highlights, articles, and sources we mentioned on the podcast today, as well as the full theme song and ways to get in touch with us. For more, find us on Twitter and Instagram at PutMeInPod or at our website, PutMeInCoachPod.com.